idea of democracy starts to fade. Some say the alternatives are ready guns.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
One ant. Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss, they're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
Unlawful ascent.
Canada's got the strongest recovery of any country on earth, and suddenly it's plunged into a fourth election in 7 years. Why is it now that the government there is being cited with contempt? Why is it now being known as a government that is so secretive and won't allow information out for its citizens? Why can't we even have open debates about foreign policy issues instead of having groups and organizations like Kairos, Rights and Democracy, we could go through the list, being shut down? Yours is the most closed administration when it comes to discussing these issues that we've seen in some time. But let me ask you simply this. Will you support my suggestion that we meet and arrange with the Auditor General for that report on the funds for the GHQ to be released now that it's already been leaked in various versions? Let's have her final report released. Will you go?
We are a decentralized, nonviolent resistance movement which seeks to restore the rule of law and fight back against the organized criminal class. 1/10 of 1% of the population has consolidated wealth in unprecedented fashion and launched an all-out economic war against 99.9% of the population. We are not affiliated with either wing of the two-party oligarchy. We seek an end to the corrupted two-party system by ending the campaign finance and lobbying racket. Above all, we aim to break up the global banking cartel centered at the Federal Reserve, the International Monetary Fund, Bank of International Settlements and World Bank. We demand the primary dealers within the Federal Reserve banking system be broken up and held accountable for rigging markets and destroying the global economy, effective immediately. As a first sign of good faith, we demand Ben Bernanke step down as Federal Reserve Chairman until our demands are met and the rule of law is restored. We will engage in a relentless campaign of nonviolent, peaceful, civil disobedience. In our next communication, we will announce our position.
My fellow Americans, this evening I come to you with a message of leave-taking and farewell, and to share a few final thoughts with you, my countrymen. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. the potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
What the heck is going on? What the heck is going on?
The number one issue we have today in Canada and have had for the past couple of years, without a shadow of a doubt, is the economy. But as I constantly remind Canadians, there isn't really a Canadian economy anymore. It is a global economy.
This is an evolution of the revolution of...
And yes, the Canadian economy, so to speak, is doing better than many other countries. But the general trajectory of the Canadian economy, whether we're on the down or downhill as we were last year, or whether we're on the rebound as we are this year, is fundamentally determined by the state of the global economy. And that's what these meetings are all about. And that's why they are so critical.
Yeah,
that's why
right.
It's so critical that we participate and play a major role, because Canadian jobs and Canadian futures are intimately linked to what goes on here. And quite frankly, everything that we do in our country to improve our country's position is ultimately to improve that position within the context of a global economy. And we cannot be effective at major economic matters any longer unless we work with our other economic partners around the world and work with them closely. That is essential. I know some people don't like it. It's a loss of national sovereignty, but it is a simple reality. It is a simple reality that we are in a global economy. The global economy is determining where we're headed and will determine our future. And we have to play our part in these forums to make sure that our interests are protected and advanced.
Play music again, you know, right? And I started the music. When I started the music, the dance was full again. All the people that run away came back, and the dance was Yeah, that's right.
To CKLN.fm in Toronto, broadcasting on the internet and on possibly we're on still channel 947 on your Rogers cable box, hopefully. And this show here you can pick up at radioforall.net in a podcast form or download MP3. And you can also catch postings on the YouTube under Plunder News. We're posting stuff there as well. I don't know if you got that, but You're listening to Plunder News. My name is Shannon, and this is CKLN.FM. Sunday morning, word of mouth programming. It's 8:53. We're live in the studio. This election eve, almost anyway, the day before our Canadian federal election, the election that nobody wanted, that well, perhaps the corporates might regret. It's amazing. I got an article on funding. Let's start with this one. Hey, we'll just outline the whole show quick. We're going to be basically covering Canadian election. The NDP surge is about to unfold the orange wave across Canada. So we're all, a lot of us, looking forward to that. At least the people tired with the conservative blue wave that had previously tried to infiltrate this country. Let's hopefully tomorrow we can have a brighter day happening on the horizon. All right. Later on, we'll be getting into a little economics. And we're actually going to finish off with coverage on the marriage there, the Prince William and the Princess Kate tying the knot on April 29th. April 29th, the same day Hitler actually married Eva Braun. They lived together for 48 more hours in a bunker in Berlin. Coincidence? Or is it just rubbing the nose, thumbing the nose in the masses? We'll be covering the marriage in the last half hour to 45 minutes or so, maybe even the last hour. It depends on how things go. For the first hour or so, we'll be covering the Canadian election. I'm going to start off with this article right here. We'll start with Ready to pay to stop Harper? Swing 33 shows how. A new website not affiliated with any party identifies races where political donations pack most punch against conservatives. An article from Michael Anderson, and it says vitaye.ca, T-Y-E-E.ca.
Yeah, that's right.
Two out of three Canadians do not want to see Stephen Harper-led government. Visit Swing 33 website to move beyond the idea of strategic voting and into the realm of strategic donation. Swing 33 simply identifies 33 key ridings where conservatives are in tight races with other parties and links you to the donation pages of the leading opposition candidates and not their headquarters. Swing 33 was created to help Canadians strategically target their money to the party and candidate of their choice to help defeat Stephen Harper. Leveling the playing field. Money's influence seems too obvious to mention, except that less than 1% of Canadians contribute money to our political process. The distaste for donating to political parties seems especially to afflict those who complain about Stephen Harper, much to the benefit of the ruling conservatives. Harper's fundraising machine now pulls in more money than all other Canadian political parties combined. The most recent figures from Election Canada shows that the Conservatives raised more than $17 million in 2009. This was almost double what was contributed to the Liberals, four times what was raised by the NDP, and 15 times more than the Green Party, 28 times more than the Bloc. These numbers certainly don't reflect the level of voter support for the Conservatives. There is also an antiquated first-past-the-post voting system, which means that for the vast majority of Canadians who don't live in a handful of swing ridings, your vote may not count as much. But while you might not be able to vote in these swing ridings, you can certainly send your money there. Swing33.ca is a website that allows you to make targeted political contributions directly to leading opposition ridings in the 33 constituencies carried by less than 5% of the 2008 vote and where conservatives came in first or second. Where a little money makes a big difference. So does money matter in politics? Obviously, the conservatives think so. Harper is again threatening to dismantle our progressive election financing system. Four senior conservatives were also recently charged with willfully exceeding election spending limits in the In-N-Out scheme of allegedly skirt national campaign spending limits. Ordinary Canadians can instead work within the important restrictions of campaign contributions to build a better country. Being an engaged citizen in our hard-won democracy means more than voting. It means supporting candidates and parties you agree with. And for the two-thirds of Canadians who do not support the current government, there now exists a tool to inform your decision when opening your wallet to help defeat Stephen Harper. It's time to embrace strategic donation at Swing 33. All right, so I just wanted to read that article to get the funding issue out and bring out the other issue that really needs to happen. We need to bring out the vote, the opposition vote to the Conservative government. I'm not endorsing any one party, although I do have my favorite. I'm just endorsing not voting Stephen Harper, which requires a little bit of strategic voting. The reasons for my belief in strategic voting are simply this, that only one-third of Canadians actually support Stephen Harper. In the last two previous elections, he received less than 35, maybe 37% of the vote, and he still was able to govern through a minority government. And we know what kind of minority government that was. It was a kind of a sad minority in that the opposition held no power, just followed along, mainly due to the Liberals, who I think are now paying for that in the polls and probably will pay tomorrow at the election booth, which is kind of sad in the fact that we can't allow the Conservatives to skate up the middle, as to make a Canadian term there. And strategic voting is the best way to prevent the Conservatives from taking advantage of a split between mainly NDP and Liberal candidates. Although there are issues in some ridings where it isn't even the NDP candidate you need to worry about. And we need to throw our support to Liberals, especially in ridings of Ken Dryden and Volpe, I forget the first name, Eglinton area ridings, mid-Toronto. As Harper's micromanaging little chip business, part of what Canada's about to vote against, perhaps may be effective in that riding, those two ridings I just mentioned off Eglinton, with Harper's, cozy relationship with the Israel and the connection to the Jewish community in those two ridings. And my only comment in that area is to say that Harper's support of Israel isn't for a love of Jewish people. It's mainly due to his religious background, being a fundamentalist right-wing Christian. And if you are able to do enough research in that area, I'm not even going to mention it on the air right now, due to the fact that I find it to be almost a hate-driven philosophy. But that would be what is behind Harper's embeddedness with Israel. It's also possibly his support of the military-industrial complex. But there's a few reasons. And Harper's micromanagement of electoral populations in Canada is a little notorious and is questionable, especially if you can dig deep and find the real beliefs of fundamentalist Christians in America, which, of course, Stephen Harper is well aligned with, not only politically, but spiritually. So I must remind Canadians, especially Jewish people, that may actually vote or think they should vote conservative, you're doing the wrong thing. Not only for Canada, your local riding, Canada, but also for Israel. And do look deep into that. I mentioned something I saw on 60 Minutes, U.S. news program a few years ago. I didn't actually find a clip. I don't know what happened to it, but I'm sure it can be found. Maybe I'll get to it one day as a an issue. Okay, I'm going to read another article. It's regarding two Bloc members endorse NDP, published off Saturday in the Star. An unprecedented move coming on the heels of NDP's meteoric rise in Quebec. Two Bloc Quebecois members are urging their fellow sovereigntists to vote orange, or NDP. In an open letter to La Presse magazine, Maxime Bellerose, a former president of the Hochelaga-Massanova Riding Association, and Benoit Demay, a former advisor of Bloc MP Riel Menard, say they will vote for the NDP and ask their political stablemates to do the same. The pair argue that the Bloc has already done all it can for Quebec, saying another option is worth exploring. They say sovereignty should still be a goal for the province, but Ottawa is the wrong place in which to fight. In quotes, it says, "We are and remain profoundly convinced that sovereignty remains the best thing Quebec and its people can follow for their development. But like many say, Quebec's sovereignty will be made in Quebec and not Ottawa," the pair writes. Bellerose and Demond, who call themselves engaged citizens and who both claim they remain Bloc members, say that Quebecers should take advantage of the social democracy now knocking on Parliament's door in the form of the NDP. "It would be a shame if Quebecers did not take advantage of this opportunity to send to Ottawa MPs who loudly and proudly share Quebec's values of justice and cooperation," they write. The letter is a sign that the cracks are starting to show in the Bloc Quebecois. And on Friday, Bloc leader Gilles Duceppe lashed out at the two defectors. "In the absence of a referendum victory, voting NDP is today the solution for escaping the cycle of minority conservative governments." And Kathleen Monk, a spokesman for Jack Layton, said, "The NDP is excited by the letter. It's indicative of all Quebecers who realize that there's a change that is coming," said Monk. "Quebecers know that if they want their values represented, they need to vote for a leader like Jack Layton who will make those issues a priority in Ottawa." And that's an article out of the Star. And, of course, referred to a newspaper letter to La Presse. It's 9:06. You're listening to Plunder News. My name is Shannon. Sunday, May 1st, the day before our Canadian election. Covering Canadian election, and we'll be getting into some economic issues and tying our Canadian election into the wedding of Prince Charles and Princess Kate. It's a bizarre little roundabout connected little world we live in here with the Queen calling the shots. Basically, here, who called for our entry into the war in Libya? Did our political parties have a process in place in Parliament that allowed, you know, discussion or some kind of debate or some kind of informed decision to be made? Who actually made the decision? Was it made in England by the Queen of England? Who decides if England goes to war? Who decides if the colonies go to war? Well, there was no discussion in Canada. Obviously, there was discussion in England. Who made the decision? All right, I said it. All right, I'm going to drop this piece next. This is from Margaret Atwood. She's got a few articles, an article published in the Star again this week, and I thought it was kind of informed, this opinion, and I'm going to run that, and I'll be right back with Plunder News.
My Paper Napkin Guide to the Election. Novelist Margaret Atwood casts her lot with the Common Decency Party. Being a writer, I write frequently. It's a nervous habit. The other day I was writing on a paper napkin, having rashly left the house without a notebook. What I was trying to figure out was the kind of country I would like to live in, and thus the kind of party I'd vote for if it were likely to encourage such qualities. Like many swing voters, I want to vote for values, not for labels. I don't much care for what parties call themselves or what they say they will do. I care about what they really have done and the values they've demonstrated by their actions. What I was looking for were qualities we swing voters might be able to agree on, no matter what party we may have voted for historically. Suppose we had a party called the Common Grounds Party, or maybe the Common Decency Party. It might begin with a list on a paper napkin. Well, here it is. As you can see, there are pairs of opposites. And since you probably can't read my handwriting, this is what it says. Where do you want to live? Open or closed? Leader or dictator? Inclusive or excluding? Generous or mean? Listens or does not listen? Takes responsibility about mistakes? Or it's always somebody else's fault? Humanly imperfect? Always right. Like God, humility or arrogance? Works well with others or a one-man band? There was a second page which included things like fair or unfair laws and enforcement, allows initiative or control freak, governs for the welfare of all citizens or non-party members or enemies. But then I ran out of space. Maybe my paper napkin is more like a description of what you might wish in a prospective roommate or best friend. Fair enough. I'd agree that a government, as opposed to an individual person, does need additional desirable characteristics. So here are some of the things I might add to the paper napkin. The ability to count, plus fiscal transparency. Parliament fell on a motion of non-confidence triggered by the Harper government's failure to disclose the real cost of budget items such as fighter planes and mega jails. But voters need to be told what things will cost, since they pay for them. It appears that the planes may cost 10 times what they were originally told. Why would taxpayers endorse a blank check for an astronomically ongoing expense with no ceiling? Either the government knew the cost and refused to tell us, thus no transparency, or it did not know and thus cannot count. On women, plain speaking, no double talk, this government is deeply traumatized by women's reproductive organs. At the G20, Harper claimed to be concerned about maternal and child health, noting that 500,000 women die each year in pregnancy and that 9 million children die before the age of 5. But his government is defunding Planned Parenthood, an international organization that works with the poorest and most marginalized women and children to improve their survival chances. Yes, I know Bev Oda says she just hasn't got around to the Planned Parenthood application for the past 18 months, but as Miss Manners says, no answer is an answer. In addition, the Harper government's Senate appointees effectively squashed Bill C-393, which would have facilitated cheap AIDS drugs to 2 million children in poor countries, which calls to mind the A.H. Clow poem, The Last Decalogue. Thou shalt not kill, but needst not strive officiously to keep alive. Harper says he will not allow a debate on abortion, but he should allow it. All aspects of this troublesome question, and it has been troublesome throughout history, as there are no lovely answers, should be thoroughly discussed. There should be clarity on Harper's attitude to women and children and their well-being. Let them die of malnutrition? Supply adequate diet, public support if there's no income? protection from rape and enforced prostitution, improved adoption procedures, education, better hospitals and access to drugs, new orphanages, enforced chastity, unwilling pregnant women locked up in mega jails, payment per baby if baby making is service provided to the state. Pace, Napoleon. What's it to be? Spit it out. Let us know what may be coming to a neighborhood near us. Respect for parliamentary democracy, the Common Grounds, and the Decency Party would, I think, still assume that democracy, for which people in other parts of the world are risking their lives, is a good thing. But it could be that no other party shares this view. Is Parliament just a fly making a bothersome buzzing noise in the ear of El Supremo, who dictates in secrecy from within the closed castle of the PMO's office? This is intended not to begin with the Harper government. It goes back to at least Trudeau, but it has taken on an extreme under it. And if we don't need Parliament, why not prorogue it indefinitely? Then we wouldn't have the trouble of those pesky elections, which Harper assumes Canadian citizens fear as a fate worse than death. The Common Ground / Decency Party would think that we should have the right to vote in free elections, as often as it takes to get a government that has the confidence of the House. So there's my checklist. You probably have items of your own. To qualify for the paper napkin, however, there should be things you think we swing voters might mostly agree on. Check the parties off against the common list, and then vote. And as they say, cherish the moment. People elsewhere are dying for it. Margaret Atwood is the author of more than 35 volumes of poetry, fiction, and nonfiction. Her most recent novel is Year of the Flood. Canada, vote. Vote for Canada. Vote for the Canada that we want to live in.
All right, we're back. CKLN.FM in Toronto. My name is Shannon. It's 9:15. You're listening to Plunder News. That was just me reading a letter by Margaret Atwood, and it was published in the Toronto Star the other day, thinking about what her political party would represent. And actually, well, if you listen there, you probably know which party she might vote for. She likes to think of herself as a swing voter. And why not? You pretty much need to be, and so do Canadians. You need to protect Canada. We'll be right back. Alright, we're here back with the next article. This is from Thomas Walkham, published on the Star this Saturday. It gives you a nice overview of the election, and thought it was worth passing on. Stephen Harper warns that Jack Layton's New Democrats could return Canada to Cold War times. Michael Nadiev says the NDP would burst the bank. In fact, both criticisms are wide of the mark, with one glaring exception, which I will get to later. The NDP platform is resolutely minimalist. Some measures have been lifted from Harper's Conservatives. Others are nearly identical to those in Michael Ignatieff's Liberals handbook. Whatever he is, Layton is not Lenin and he's not Tony Blair. Like most election manifestos, the NDP platform is a sly document. It talks of doubling Canadians' pension plan benefits. But read carefully, the platform promises only that the NDP government would work with the provinces to do so, which they probably must. Given that both Quebec and Alberta have already vetoed such a change, the pledge won't get far soon. Similarly, the party's much-touted promise to train new doctors is dependent on what the platform calls provincial cooperation and presumably provincial money. Layton does make bold promises about investing in rapid transit, building urban infrastructure, and reintroducing home renovation subsidies and cutting taxes for home heating fuel. But his platform's costing annex shows that all of these are contingent on Ottawa's ability to raise billions from what, in effect, would be a new carbon tax. And it says that the NDP government would go ahead with a new carbon or cap and trade tax only if the U.S. does the same, as to ensure a level playing field for North American businesses, which sounds a lot like Harper. Other more definite promises also resemble pledges made by Harper and Ignatieff. Like the Liberals, the NDP would spend on home care and education, and like the Conservatives, it would provide additional monies to poor old people, albeit more than Harper wants to give. A proposed NDP tax break for volunteer firefighters is straight out of the last Conservative budget, and so too a scheme to help demobilize soldiers retrained. Like the Conservatives, the NDP relies on tax breaks for businesses to create jobs. The key difference here is that Layton would focus on small business rather than large, multinational corporations. Nor is the NDP platform fiscally unorthodox. Like the Conservatives, the NDP promises to balance the budget within 4 years. And like Harper and Ignatieff, Layton relies largely on economic growth and hence rising tax revenues to accomplish that end. The Conservatives will plug any remaining fiscal gap by cutting government spending. But the Liberals and the NDP would accomplish the same by raising corporate taxes. The most striking element of the NDP platforms are its omissions. There is no suggestion of scuppering the free trade talks between Canada and the EU, European Union, and in fact, there is no reference to the trade at all. There is also radio silence on the tentative Canada-US agreement to create a North American security perimeter. Defense. The NDP says it would not reverse Harper's planned increases in military spending. It does say it wants to bring Canadian troops home from Afghanistan, but it doesn't say when. Layton says he would reopen the Constitution, eventually, to appease Quebec. The key word here is eventually, which makes the NDP position a little different from that of the other two parties. The most radical NDP proposal is not in the platform. That's Layton's promise to let Quebec keep its current share of common seats, even if its population share drops, a fundamental undemocratic scheme that would give voters in that province much more clout than other Canadians. Neither the Conservatives nor the Liberals are yet calling Layton on that pledge. The three parties may disagree on much, but they all want Quebec seats. So there you go, summary of the politics that's been played in Canada for the last 5 weeks. Tomorrow we get to go vote. And, a vote for Jack Layton's NDP and a strategic vote for the Liberal Party in the areas that the NDP can't win would be a definite boost to Canada. You know, Harper's plan to support the multinational corporations is just clear lunacy. And we'll be dropping a piece coming from Real News later. Actually, very soon. I better get to it. I got less than just about an hour left in the show today. So, stick tuned as we kind of run this issue by you, the economic issue, corporate tax cuts, specifically globalism, which Harper strongly recommends. Actually, in our initial piece with the loss of sovereignty is what Harper believes in. And I strongly believe that Jack Layton's New Democratic Party, if they were able to make a play with a couple more seats than the Liberals, and the fact that they have this the corporate tax cuts as a lead issue, and they're in agreement on that, could perhaps take control of the government, even if Harper comes up with a minority lead in the first past the poll system. Our parliament does allow for the party with the most number of people voting for and the confidence of the House to rule the country, which would could leave the door open for Layton after a strong result tomorrow. So please do get out to vote. The vote that the people that will vote for the NDP are the ones that really need to move to the polls, especially the youth. It doesn't take much to vote. You can probably show up with your, say, driver's license or health card, photo ID, and a utility bill with your name and address on it. And that would match up with your driver's license. Even if you're not on the list, you know, do allow some time to get yourself on that list. But if you can prove you're a Canadian citizen, so a passport would help. Birth certificate. Maybe three pieces of ID. The right kinds I just mentioned. All right, I'm going to drop another piece here. This one's bringing us back to our beginning pieces where we had Eisenhower on talking about the New World Order, the military-industrial complex. And now we have another American, Ralph Nader. He's coming, taking sides on our election, and he's encouraging Canadians to do the right thing for Canada and the world, because even the Americans need some kind of guidance, or at least a different opinion now and again, which of course Harper is not giving. All right, we'll drop this piece from Ralph Nader, and that was published in The Star again this week.
So Ralph Nader warns Canada that secret talks with the United States could curb our independence. It's entitled Beware Deep Integration. Opponents of Prime Minister Stephen Harper are finding that, in one commentator's words, questions of Harper's ethics, accountability, secrecy, and contempt for democracy have not stuck. Questions about secrecy, however, should stick. Harper's secret ongoing negotiations for deep integration with the United States could diminish the features of Canadian independence, which have brought Canada world-envied standards of living, including Medicare for all. Public attention before May 2 regarding the contents of the forthcoming agreement between Harper and President Barack Obama could motivate many voters to go to the polls to preserve Canadian independence. Loss of Canadian independence between the eras of Jean Chrétien and Stephen Harper have meant moving from no involvement in the George W. Bush Iraq atrocities to military engagement in the quagmire of Afghanistan. It has meant less resistance to the demands for military procurement for unneeded U.S. weapons. Harper and his fellow conservatives intend to sign on to a $29 billion boondoggle purchase of the F-35 fighter aircraft. The Pentagon's F-35 contract with Lockheed Martin is racked with huge cost overruns, delays, and technical troubles. Maybe the Washington war machine wants Canada to help salvage that procurement mess for a still unfinished aircraft having no Canadian defense rationale. The early tangle of deep integration within the framework of a North America security perimeter agreement being readied secretly without public participation for signing by Ottawa and Washington later this year is just beginning. The post-9/11 corporate government U.S. response has been driven by the business opportunities inherent in massive overexpenditures. The post-9/11 corporate government U.S. response has been driven by the business opportunities inherent in massive overexpenditures. Both Bush and Obama, in varying degrees, have sanctioned the abridgment of civil liberties, unlawful surveillance, and the transgressions of international law involved in the grotesque overreactions that are Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Once the U.S. government's national security scaffolding surrounds Canada, many policy matters will become national security priorities. Canadian energy, water, the Canadian Arctic, anti-monopoly enforcement, and the Canadian foreign investment policies could be subsumed under national security imperatives. These imperatives are increasingly defined and pursued by giant corporations and ideologues running the corporate government in Washington. The executive appointments, lobbyists, campaign finance cash, and mass media propaganda are what President Dwight Eisenhower warned about in his farewell address 50 years ago and presently named the military-industrial complex. Importing this national security state apparatus and mindset not only erodes the exercise of fundamental freedom of speech and dissent, but destroys Canada's historic peacekeeping role in the world, now at its lowest ebb ever. Deep integration with the American brand of warmongering corporatism will wreak havoc with federal budget allocations at a time when most Canadian households are less well off economically, adjusted for inflation, than 20 years ago, in spite of overall GDP growth. In Canada, too, the rich are getting richer from GDP gains at the expense of the rest of the Canadian people. This election presents an opportunity for citizens to question and demand truthful responses from their incumbent government about serious risks to Canadian independence. What is Harper, who has an authoritarian bent, offering in his secret deliberations with the United States government? I came to love and admire Canada as a schoolboy camping in the Ontario Lake Country. In 1993, I co-authored a best-selling book, Canada Firsts, to demonstrate what Canadian independence has given to its people. The first North American credit unions, universal health care systems, the first anti-smoking campaigns, and scores of other civilized firsts. Progressives in the United States often point to Canadian practices as models. Most recently, your most prudent banking regulations avoided a disastrous Wall Street-styled collapse. Canadian independence, however frayed it has become under absentee corporate ownership and other squeezes from its giant neighbor to the south, has always mattered to the world. Deep integration and all it involves for your people needs to become a major election issue before a lengthy period of unilateral government solidifies. Canadian independence starts with a commitment by your political leaders, embodying the Canadian consensus and its comprehensively unique Canadian social contract. The Canadian notion of sovereignty and of self-government must not be undermined by global corporations through their Washington consensus for your sake and ours. As written by Ralph Nader, lawyer, consumer advocate, and author. He was named by The Atlantic as one of the 100 most influential figures in American history. And I had to read that for Canadians before they go to the polls. Don't forget, vote for Canada and to retain our sovereignty.
All right, 88.1 FM. Sorry, excuse me. No, just CKLN.FM. Broadcasting out of Ryerson Campus in Toronto. My name is Shannon. You're listening to Plunder News. We've got 9:34 on Eastern Standard Time. All right, another article here. This one here, we're going to move off of the election now. This will be my last piece, and that'll be it for the... until next time. Of course, Plunder News will be back next week, as it is each and every Sunday morning, 8:30 to it looks like 10:30 a.m. Broadcasting live as we plunder the news, local, international, reading the stuff that doesn't quite get the coverage in the puppet news. All right. Again, my name is Shannon. You can catch postings of this program at radioforall.net. That's radio, the number 4. all.net, and you can search that under Plunder News or CKLN, and you can also find postings at YouTube. It takes a few more days to get the YouTube up with some pictures. Of course, my video camera didn't work today. The battery died last week. Yeah, I should have charged that. Of course, my camera's a little... Anyway, check out our postings on YouTube. The last 2 weeks we have been covering Canadian elections. We have many issues covered, and we're just putting the final wrap here on our Canadian coverage, Canadian election coverage. Almost 5 hours, actually. Surprising stuff. A lot of work. And I'm going to read this last article. It's actually published March 31st at the beginning of the election, written by Rick Salutin, and it's entitled Romance of Elections. Seriously. And we're reading the last section here. So it starts with but. But what about those, I also include myself, who feel that undiluted about how democratic the reality is, who realize elections are stacked due to corporate money behind big parties, a biased media, and a moronic first-past-the-post voting structure that makes real democratic outcomes wishful thinking. Are they absolved from participating in these rigged elections? No. No, you're not absolved from participating in the rigged election. You must go out and vote. And if you're young and NDP, you must vote. Try a little harder to get out and vote. Bring extra pieces of ID, including your Canadian citizenship, your health card, or photo ID equivalents, and a utility bill, like your telephone bill with your home address on it. And go out and vote. Because you never know for sure what might happen if you act politically. South Africans fought apartheid for years and it didn't budge. And then it crumbled. The Soviet Union seemed impregnable. And then it crumbled. Now it's so gone that if you describe it to anyone under 25, it sounds like medieval times. Now there's Egypt, Tunisia. You just never really know. Even the thinker whose name is synonymous with cynicism about politics, Machiavelli, wrote, "Men ought never give way to despair, since they do not know their end, and it comes through indirect and unknown ways. They always have reason to hope." So do go out and vote in this election. Canada needs to show up at the polls to fight this globalist wave that Harper is threatening us with. We need to organize our democracy, possibly through strategic voting. And I will suggest, do visit projectdemocracy.ca. They do have pretty much up-to-date local polling, although their national polling looks a little questionable, like 2 weeks old. But they have updated information on the local areas. So you can find out if you need to throw your vote to the Liberals or the NDP in your riding, just simply by typing in your postal code and confirming you got the right area, right candidate. You can see who needs more support at this time to defeat the Conservative candidate in your neighborhood. So do visit projectdemocracy.ca to confirm who you need to vote for. Go down and do a vote. Anyway, I'm going to read this one little quote from Machiavelli one more time. "Men ought never give way to despair, since they do not know their end, and it comes through indirect and unknown ways. They always have reason to hope." If that's the conclusion you reach, then it's up to the rest of us to suck it up and do what we can politically. Grim as the options often seem. And that was written by Rick Salutin and Machiavelli. Read by me on Plunder News 80.1 FM. Summing up our election coverage for 2011 Canada. Vote for Canada. There's only one real alternative at this point. Plunder News. Okay, moving on. I'm going to get into some economics. This one's going to be serious stuff. Actually, should I play some music first? Yeah, let's play one track here. I found this track is written by Jackson Browne. It's a very recent production, I should say. If I Could Be Anywhere. And, just listen to the lyrics. Let it sink in a bit, and you'll catch the magic of this tune. Of course, it's Jackson Browne, and it's just a solo guitar and folk music singer-songwriter style, which to me, as much as I like my dubstep, which I've been promoting quite fiercely on this program, dubstep is my... Anyway, folk is the basis of all music, believe it or not. And this one here from Jackson Brown on Planet News. Ending our Canadian election and bringing us into a little more economics international discussion, which is all going to tie back to this election. If you stick tuned for the next hour, or should say 50 minutes, you will catch the big circle. It all comes back to what you're going to vote for. Globalism or Canada? It's your choice at the polls on Monday, tomorrow, in Canada. Do go out and vote.